18-year-old Madeline Beals was a senior at Moore High School in Oklahoma, set to graduate with a 4.0 GPA and as a star basketball player when her life was tragically cut short in April 2023. As we cover her story today, please remember that the women and girls that we cover on this podcast are more than the circumstances that happened to them. Madeline was a member of the Osage tribe and will be remembered by her friends and family as a light and a person who always strove to see the good in people. This is a story of Madeline Maddie Beals.
Hey guys, this is Ash.
This is Shiashi.
This is Maggie, and you're listening to We Are Resilient.
Shio friends, we're skipping the small talk today and jumping right into today's case. Maggie, are you ready?
Yes, but I want to start today's story with a little bit of a trigger warning because this story is graphic and includes information regarding graphic sexual assault. So if you would like to avoid listening to this, you can choose to skip to the next episode. We know that many of these stories that we share contain facts that are very hard to listen to, but we are passionate about sharing the stories of these lost women, despite how hard it may be. Madeline Maddie Beals, affectionately known as Maddie B by her friends and loved ones, was a high school senior who was just days away from graduating with honors and a 4.0 GPA. Maddie had big plans to further her education at Northeast Oklahoma A&M College after graduation and had even been offered a spot on the college's basketball team.
Oh, I heard this story. It's really sad. Oklahoma. Yeah, I had I read about it like a month ago. She was such an awesome, aspiring young lady.
Yeah, she really was. And she was beautiful, like stunning. The pictures of her, I mean, you can just tell that she's just an all-around great girl. Maddie was described as a standout athlete and an amazing young lady who had a great impact on many lives. Maddie was a member of the Osage Nation. And just to kind of touch on a little bit of historical facts about the Osage Nation, they are historically known as a spiritual group of people. The Osage Indians were known to be excellent hunters and fierce warriors. The name Osage is loosely translated to people of the middle waters. The tribe's homelands were originally located in the Ohio and Mississippi River valleys before migrating and settling near the confluence of the Mississippi and Missouri rivers. So the Mississippi River is the second longest river in the United States, and at some parts is over 200 feet deep. It's a huge body of water.
I'm not very familiar with the Osage tribe, to be honest.
The Osage Nation might be getting a little more publicity right now because...
Oh, that's right. Sorry, Maggie. I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's the new movie that is coming out this year, Killers of the Flower Moon. It's a book too, right?
Yeah, I'm reading it. And like during the early 1920s, they were like the richest tribe in the nation.
Oh, wow. Maggie, did you read it too?
Yes, I have. One of my friends gave me his copy of the book probably like a year and a half ago when I read it. That was before there was even thoughts of like a movie. So it's pretty awesome that now this story of the Osage people is kind of being highlighted by this movie coming out. Many of the other indigenous people in the United States, the Osage tribe was forcibly removed from their native lands in the 19th century. And present day, the majority of the descendants live in Oklahoma. Can you imagine being like the people of the water and being near like one of the largest bodies of water in the United States and being forcibly moved to Oklahoma in the desert?
It's the commonality between indigenous tribes and forced removal. You know, the Cherokee were forced from the mountains, literally hugging trees goodbye as they were forced to walk the Trail of Tears to Oklahoma.
So it just kind of highlights, you know, just how tragic forcible relocation of indigenous people is to so many different tribes.
Exactly.
So Maddie was 18 years old at the time of her death and still lived with her parents. Her parents had actually converted a pool house on their fenced property to a bedroom for Maddie. This is where she stayed the majority of the time, as it was just feet from her parents' home. This is where, on April 22nd, 2023, Maddie's parents found her lifeless body. After Maddie's death, information came out about her ex-boyfriend, Chase Cook. Friends recalled Maddie reportedly saying that she was afraid of him and that she had planned to move back into the main house with her parents because she was afraid of what he would do or that he would come to harm her. Her friends reportedly stated that she was so scared of Chase. Unfortunately, Maddie never made the move back into her parents' home before what she feared became her reality.
Maggie, were there any details on the history of their relationship and why she was so scared?
No, and I get into that a little bit towards the end.
Okay.
Originally, when Maddie's story was reported, the headlines read, Oklahoma cops, death of a high school girl called, quote, suspicious. Now, I don't really understand why the death was only called suspicious and not an immediate homicide, but a lot of the details of this case are limited due to how recent it was. Kind of made me upset that, you know, this star athlete girl who it completely shook the family that she passed away, but her death was only listed as suspicious.
Well, even if they are holding details close to the chest, if it's a homicide, just call it what it is.
Exactly. And maybe they were trying to not startle people, but at the same time, it's like, you know, people should be made aware of risks and potential incidents in their own community.
Absolutely.
So shortly after Maddie's death, video camera footage was reviewed, and it was noticed that the ex-boyfriend that she had said she was afraid of was in the neighborhood of the Bill's home on the night of her death. It was reported that there was video footage of Cook jumping over the Bill's family fence multiple times through the night.
I don't know how you explain that away. Jumping a fence back and forth all night the night she died.
The individual believed to be Cook was seen jumping over the Bill's family fence both at 4:38 a.m., and again at 6:42 a.m. on the night in question. This evidence led officers to obtain several search warrants in regards to Chase Cook, allowing them to search his car, clothes, obtain DNA evidence, and were able to confiscate Cook's cell phone. According to court documents, this is where they found the most incriminating evidence. While executing the search warrant, law enforcement officials reviewed the content on Cook's phone, where investigators found very disturbing evidence. Investigators reported that Cook had searched how long does a rape victim have to press charges? And what happens if someone is strangled for a long time?
Oh my God.
It was further discovered that Cook had also searched chloroform and how long does chloroform take to put someone to sleep?
Oh my God. He was clearly planning something here.
In addition to the incriminating search history on Cook's phone, investigators also found a disturbing video that was recorded on the night of Maddie's death. Investigators found a video where Chase Cook videoed himself sexually assaulting the victim, who appears to be unconscious. In the video, Cook positions the phone on a nightstand next to the bed and records himself raping the victim.
That is horrific.
According to court documents, the manner of Maddie's death was determined to be homicide by strangulation.
My God, she was only 18.
How old was her boyfriend?
19.
19 and already such a vile human being to come into her home.
In her room. And what's supposed to be her safe place, clearly did something with chloroform or tried to, and raped her.
While she was unconscious and strangled her to death.
At like one of the most exciting times of your life, when you're about to graduate high school and you're going to be starting college soon. So it's your last summer at home.
Clearly there was so much waiting for her in the future, and this boy just took it away from her.
You know, just recently I've read of articles too, actually. One was in Florida and one happened here in North Carolina. In both situations, it's similar to this one. They had an ex-girlfriend, and the one in North Carolina, the boys, you know, after he was dropped off at school and the girl was dropped off at school, grabbed her and pulled her to the bushes and stabbed her 20 times. And she's still in the hospital. And then the one in Florida, it was this thing, like he stabbed her. And I think the mom was involved and he stabbed her. I don't know what's going on with these relationships.
Teen dating violence is on the rise right now.
And these kids are doing these horrific crimes thinking they can get away with it.
Ultimately, a case was filed on May 1st, and an arrest warrant was issued for Chase Cook for the first-degree murder and first-degree rape in the death of Madeline Maddie Bills. Cook was arrested the same day an initial $1 million bond was set. According to the affidavit of probable cause, when Cook was read his Miranda rights during interviewing, he voluntarily offered an alibi for his whereabouts on the night in question. He reportedly told investigators that he was in Galveston, Texas from April 16th to April 23rd for training to become a Navy SEAL. He even tried to provide more faith in his alibi by reportedly telling officers that it should be noted that the drive from Oklahoma City to Galveston is over 7 hours, according to Google Maps.
Wow, this kid is an idiot.
His alibi quickly unraveled and indicated that it took very little time to poke holes in his alibi.
Of course it did. He was on video.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It was reported that once investigators informed Cook that they had proof he was in the area where the murder occurred, he quickly asked for a lawyer and the interview ceased. Through the investigation, it was learned that not only was there evidence of Cook's cell phone in the area of the victim's residence on the night of the murder, but it was also noted that Cook's DNA matched the DNA obtained from swabs taken during the initial on-scene investigation and during the autopsy of the victim. Today, Chase Cook remains held without bond in Cleveland County, Oklahoma, awaiting trial.
Maggie, has the family said anything about Madeline's relationship? You said this happened just in April this year.
So throughout the course of my investigating of the story, I never found any evidence that authorities were actually notified of any domestic violence or any concerning behavior by Chase Cook, other than Maddie sharing the concern about Chase's behavior to her friends. So it seemed like whatever violence she was enduring was never reported to her parents or law enforcement officials.
I can't imagine how scared she had to be that whatever happened that led to the relationship ending made her worry about her own safety.
She felt like she made the right decision by leaving him, or, you know, ending the relationship and, you know, trying to get away from it.
And not knowing that he would stalk her and break in and do what he did.
And that's not really clear.
I'm sure there are more missing pieces here that will come to light when this inevitably goes to trial.
Probably so. We have a lot of young listeners, both in our community and elsewhere, and it is so important that our young people understand that dating violence is real, even at a young age. A teenager's love life can be very confusing and heartbreaking. And I know this firsthand because I have a teenager at home, and I've had multiple conversations with him about learning how to navigate relationships. But I do feel like, you know, navigating relationships is something that is ever evolving. We're always learning how to deal with people, how to deal with emotions, you know, how to deal with things. So I just wanted to put a simple reminder to all of our listeners is that love shouldn't hurt. And parents, it's never too early to start the discussion around healthy relationships with our children.
What scares me is that a lot of relationship violence is often normalized. Like, that's how so-and-so's relationship is. They just fight. We either look the other way or truly believe that these really, really unhealthy relationships are the model of what we should expect out of our partner. If we are in unhealthy relationships, breaking up and getting back together, breaking up, getting back together, fighting, kicking each other out of the house and going back and forth, we're showing our kids what is acceptable. The waters here are murky because, like I said, if domestic violence is our normal, we don't know any other way. And as a survivor, I can attest that coming to the realization that what you went through was not okay doesn't come easier right away.
Domestic violence doesn't...
It doesn't favor any particular person.
No, not at all. It can happen to anyone.
But on the other hand, people can find themselves in abusive relationships even if they grew up in a healthy household with two loving parents.
I've learned about this thing called the chaos theory. Basically, it's like the environment that you're brought into are the coping skills that you're going to learn. If there's drinking, alcohol abuse, tobacco, drugs, those kind of abuses that are used by the adults to cope with things, then that's how we're going to learn as children to deal with things. If our parents talk to us about things, we're going to learn how to communicate. And so in the chaos theory, we're picking up all the traits that are around us, our environment that molds us. Sometimes when people experience trauma, they usually don't mature past that age, if that makes sense, because they're kind of stuck in that time because they've never dealt with the trauma in a healthy way. They found other ways to deal with things. One thing that we're trying to overcome is, how do we develop healthy relationships? How do we heal from trauma? How do we accept it? How do we move on and heal and spread awareness about it? Because if we have adults who are not adulting at a level that they should, how are we going to raise children to be adults?
I can see that. Our kids do learn from what we do. But on the other side of the spectrum here is that ultimately, we are responsible for what we do and responsible for our own actions. At 19, whether this Chase guy went through something traumatic or not, he's old enough to know that murder is wrong.
And just to add to that, you know, what I was going to say was that, so first of all, Maddie came from a very good family. Her mom is a PhD and was the assistant superintendent of the school system in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. So it seems to be that she came from a very good family. I don't know anything about Chase Cook's history. And it may be that, you know, he has a traumatic past. It doesn't justify his actions in any way. Teenagers are different these days. They're on their phones 24/7. They have almost full access to the internet, which is very scary because there are so many bad things on the internet. And there's something about this current society of kids where they feel like words don't really matter. And I have seen on multiple occasions where saying stuff like, well, I'm going to kill myself is just like a layman's term and not something that, you know, it's just things like that, like very manipulative words and words that should have a big impact. A lot of teenagers these days just kind of use them loosely. And even in today's world, like it's so easy to even know where people are. Like 90% of the time because people post so much on social media. Kids are snapping each other like back and forth all day long, you know? So there's a lot more opportunity, I feel like, and it's really scary.
There's just a lot to worry about as a parent when you've got to let your kid go out into the world and watch as they make connections and develop relationships with people that you don't really know.
Kids don't think that anything bad will ever happen because they're kids and they shouldn't. But, right. you know, it's also like, at what point, like, do we need to make our kids like cautious of other people? Because, you know, and I talked to Shiashi a little bit about this. We were like, you know, why is it always the beautiful, like successful girl who has such a promising future ahead of her? And I said, because these perpetrators, these abusers target women like that. That's what they go for, is the people who would believe in them, who would think the best of them, regardless of their past or regardless of their actions. And it's just terrible.
People take advantage of kindness.
She was going to be somebody. I mean, the way that her family described her, and then like all the social media posts that were about her that came out when it happened, she lived a beautiful life. And she was just someone who was going to shine so brightly. Her family, her friends, and this world was robbed of someone special.
You know, going back to what Maggie was saying about teen dating violence, it's so important that these conversations happen because oftentimes people don't know what all domestic violence encompasses. I didn't until a friend of mine showed me the power and control wheel.
Domestic/intimate partner violence can be described as a pattern of behaviors used by current or former romantic partners to maintain power and control over another person. And it's important to recognize any red flags. Domestic violence can look different in every relationship. But know that if you are experiencing signs of an abusive partner or relationship, or if you witness a friend or loved one experiencing this, that there are many resources out there to offer support and help. Domestic violence can be a silent killer because many times people believe that the behavior will change or the perpetrator will make empty promises to stop the abusive behavior. However, we know based off of the stories that we have covered that more times than not, the abuse does not stop until something tragic happens. I don't want to make any assumptions, but based off of what I've read about who Maddie was as a person, it seemed like she always saw the good in people and never gave up on others. And I could see how she may believe that despite the threats Chase made to her, that he would never be capable of causing her harm. Maddie's family is devastated at the loss of their daughter and want her to be known and remembered for who she was and not the circumstances of her death. And this is something that we too are adamant about. We tell these women's stories with the intention of raising awareness regarding issues that Indigenous people face, but also to humanize these women, as many times their stories get reduced to only the circumstances of their death. The Bills family released a statement regarding the tragic loss of their daughter, which I will read. Our family is heartbroken at the loss of our beautiful daughter, Madeline Marie Bills. No family should have to endure such a terrible tragedy. We are grateful for the outpouring of love and compassion our family has received from so many in our community. Our family believes that this is a direct reflection of the love, light, and positive energy that Maddie poured into others throughout her life. We want Madeline's life to be forever defined by how she lived, how she loved, and the countless ways she uplifted everyone. We want her to be remembered for all that she gave her friends and family. She was a beautiful soul, a bold competitor on the basketball court, and a beloved child of God. While Maddie saw the best in everyone, our family was very grateful for the Moore Police Department and continue to trust the authorities and respect the law and administrative processes that will occur. We continue to plead with the media to respect our great loss and focus on the love and beauty that Madeline brought us all. We ask that the press not allow her light and life to be diminished by matters beyond her and our control. Our family will always focus on how Madeline Marie Bills lived her life and not how it was tragically cut short. The family has started the Madeline M. Bills Scholarship Fund in her memory, and the link can be found at madelinebills.org. By all accounts, Maddie was a person who would fill the room with light and love, one that was always an advocate for others and for doing what's right. The world lost a gem with the tragic death of Madeline Maddie Bills. If you or someone you know is in a domestic violence situation and needs support, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233 or text START to 88788 to be connected to a live advocate.
Thank you for listening to We Are Resilient. For links to information found for this episode, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at We Are Resilient Podcast. Send us an email at weareresilientpod@gmail.com or visit us at www.war-podcast.com.